This is a mic. These are talking into this recording. That's shit.
We are getting it.
Thank the light, everyone. I'm your pod mistress.
And I will be your law-abiding citizen, Sadai. It's a little inside. It's all right.
Before the mics went on.
What is that? What is that? The thing the kids say? If you know, you know.
if you don't know, now you know.
So you see this? There's going to be bubbling.
Oh yeah,
it's going to be bubbling tonight.
Stony, bubbling. Bring it on.
Yeah. So yeah. No. Like I said. That being said, I missed a little work last week, so I am pretty well rested for the most part.
Very nice. Ooh, awesome. I'm doing all right. I met with the group that I will eventually be hallucinating with.
It's like that. It's like a whole like thing.
It's a whole
people
whole,
you don't have never known before.
Nope, just people who are similarly fucked up and want a little help. And
if this doesn't work, we're gonna do ketamine next, and then.
Well, it's interesting because my main therapist kind of assumed it was mushrooms, and then we were talking as a group, and it's going to be a while. It's going to be a couple months before we actually do it because she wants it to be nicer on her property, a little bit warmer. And she's like, I'm thinking LSD, but we'll see what the group says. And
I mean, if you get good acid, it's, you know, or DMT, you know, people are all about the DMT, but it doesn't last very long.
Yeah.
You can't really get ayahuasca in this country unless you know people. So
I can't get ayahuasca in this country.
I mean, I don't know how that works, but up with hope, down with dope. I don't do drugs. Oh, sorry. What happened?
Here's something we haven't said in a while. Welcome to the Wheel of Time podcast. We are the true source, the purest light, your companion cast, a warder, if you will, for this journey to all things Wheel of Time. All things good and bad and indifferent about Wheel of Time.
And since we are live on YouTube, to steal a line from Deadpool, we are absolutely prohibited from using cocaine on camera.
We're going to get on Disney someday.
Pegging isn't new to me, friendo, but it is to Disney.
As long as I don't say things like butthole and ass wipe.
Butthole. Butthole. Dude, you know, it's funny. I watched Deadpool, you know, once or like one and a half times. And the most recent one, I've watched it like a couple times in parts and I think twice all the way through. But you know how we are about movie lines and stuff.
Yeah.
And so many of them, I kind of, you catch them the first time and then you catch them going back through and there's so many good ones.
So many. There's, yeah.
Hugh Jackman has so many good lines, dude. It's just when Johnny Storm, he's like, when they figure out it's Johnny Storm, we don't know him. We thought we did. We don't know him.
Dude, we could do a minute podcast on the Deadpool trilogy. And
oh, yeah. All day.
Eat.
That one was really so good. Much. There's just so much good stuff when he's talking to, you know, Electra or whatever, and like, and then Gambit's like, oh, everybody dies, the Quicksilver, the Daredevil, he's like, oh, it must have been hard for you, she's like, it's fine, it's Ben Affleck plays Daredevil, that's her ex-husband,
that's right.
It's like,
that's
for right. Fuck's sake, it's fantastic.
I got a good laugh at theater recently. We went to see Wild Robot, and not really a spoiler, but this robot ends up taking care of a tiny baby creature and that's the robot's job, is to take care of things. It's not necessarily to raise children, but that's what it's doing. And this robot is like,
right.
And the robot,
this is what I do.
The robot is like, I don't know, I wasn't planning on this. And then you just hear from the distance, some other animal go, crushing obligation. And, you know, I'm in a theater full of parents and children. And
you're the only one laughing.
Oh, nobody laughed at that line, but several people laughed at me.
I was talking to one of my buddies about the Deadpool thing, and he's like, I went and watched it in the theater. And he goes, when the Johnny Storm thing, when they think it's, you know, Cap, whatever happened, he goes, yeah. I fucking started laughing hysterically. And like, not a lot of other people got it because I think he was only Johnny Storm for one or maybe two movies. They weren't very popular. They're pretty bad. But it was just like, he goes, I was like, ha ha. And then he's like, everybody else is silent. And they're just like, what? He's like, no, it's because
it's
never mind.
Nobody under 28 has a clue. And even most of the people under 40 don't get it either.
He is, man. I work with a couple of kids who are kind of older souls. It's pretty funny.
So
he was born the day after me, too. So we're.
Oh, right.
Dude, have I said this? I have never been around so many fucking Aries in my life. I feel like I get strength every day I go to work. Every other person I check is a fucking April birthday. It's insane.
That's nice that you get.
I check IDs for a living, dude. And I was like,
yeah, that's true.
I had a lady who was born on my exact same birthday. I think we were born like an hour apart. I've never even had like, yeah.
Wow.
Same year, you know, like, yeah,
twinsies. Wow. But real quick, before I forget, talking about great movie lines, I just learned today that on the Mallrats Blu-ray, there is a director's cut and there is a half hour longer version of Mallrats that exists in the world.
Sorry. Fucking coming in, Nick, this time in my ears. What?
Yeah. Why we're not just doing that now instead of talking about the Shadow Wheel of Time, the Shadow.
Yeah, let's get into Wheel of Time because.
So this is going to be interesting. I'm really interested in what Justin says because I, on a rare occasion, I had a little road trip to go to my group. It was up in Sebastopol, so I had a 90-minute drive. So I just listened to chapter 20 and beyond. So I got to like chapter 25, but I was just about ready to text Justin and say, we should do three chapters so we can just let the first chapter bleed into what they're doing. And Justin texted me, we need a whole hour on chapter 20. So
yeah,
I am very, and I listened to it two more times. I listened to chapter 20 two more times, and there's definitely a lot here, but I still think that it's leading to a lot, and I'm interested to see how much you actually dug out of this.
Well, chapter 22 is what we're talking about.
Oh, you know, sorry. That, right? Chapter 22, out
yeah,
of
okay.
the stone.
I'm like, don't tell me I watched the wrong Ouija again. Okay, because I can't.
Can you see the name of our episode? Is it in the top of your screen? Shadow Rising, chapter 22, Out of the Stone.
Oh, I just see the shadow. No, I just see the book behind you.
Okay. Not there, like on your screen. Oh, you probably have your screen blown up. I have.
Oh, yeah, Out of the Stone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, yeah, I had you full screen. My bad.
So the listener can see that. So hopefully.
Jeremy, if you're listening, too bad you're not here, you sucker motherfucker. I could use your help on this one because there is a lot of shit going on. Like, Dez, did you feel during chapter 22 like there was a lot going on, or did you feel like it was like, oh my God, this is set up for all the craziness to come?
Well, like I said, I felt like it was more set up. The last couple of chapters have been a lot of like,
right,
sit around this table and talk.
Where's Perrin gonna go? Who's gonna go with them? What are they doing?
Now we're at least walking and talking, so something is happening. But I still feel like next chapter something's gonna really happen. This chapter,
yes, I mean, you're right, but at this, it's like the next rest of this book is shit's going fucking down.
Oh, okay. This is a launching.
You know all the battles you've been waiting for, bro?
Yes.
It's happening. Remember towards the end of Dragon Reborn when it's like they're chasing after Rand, they have the Dark Hounds, they get to the stone, the Aiel are in the stone, all that kind of shit. Like how the last quarter of that book is. The rest of this book is like that. It's pretty nuts. It's pretty crazy.
Hey, Justin. Hey, Justin.
What?
I don't remember. That was 4 years ago.
Hey, the most Rand's going crazy. He's running to the Stone of Tyr. He kills that group of people and like bows their heads. Moraine and Lan and Perrin are going after him, trying to catch him. There's Dark Hounds. There's a lot of action. You know, you're gonna get your fight scenes, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, I kind of remember, but for me to like try to recap that by myself would be like,
right,
nope.
You're getting the iceberg that is the companions or their Wheel of the Time is starting to grind into motion, and it's about to get really fucking real. So we start in the stone. Rand is trying to get ready to leave. The Aiel are just, they're basically like bloodhounds, bodyguards. They don't leave his side.
So real quick, we'll go, you'll walk me through this slowly. So I know there's like eight names for every place. What is the stone?
It is the, for all intents and purposes, the government building of Tyr. It's okay. Where the High Lords meet, live, conduct court. It's basically the royal court, and it's all enclosed in one kind of fortress.
So it's the White House.
Think of it
the United States.
You think of the White House, except
Parliament. How about
fucking
Parliament?
Winterfell? It's Winterfell, right? It's Winterfell. Okay. Tyr is the city of Winterfell. The stone is the stone of Tyr. It is the castle. It is where the blood lives. Also, this episode brought to you by Sazerac Rye.
Woohoo!
Someday. So yeah, you know, Rand is kind of gathering, everybody together. He's got the High Lords. We had just talked about last week how he was very shrewd about where he was putting everybody, right? As far as like, oh, well, you know, your husband and you're going to tend to him and then you're going to go help out in Carheen. And he, with Tom's help, manages to put his opposition, the people who either want to kill him or undermine him or just kind of do whatever they want when he's gone. He's basically spreading them out so they can't consort with each other, and they can't put their plans that they want to do as far as like Deus de Mar and sabotage and all that kind of stuff. They can't really put them in play if they're not, you know, if they're doing what Rand says they're supposed to do or he's going to kill them, they don't really have time to fuck around, right?
Yes.
Let's see. Rand, you were getting a little bit from Rand in this one. It's like, I don't want to call it arrogance. He's starting to kind of come into his own as a man and as a leader. He's trying really, really hard to find out the right thing to do, and not just for himself or his friends or so he can live. He's kind of even already accepted at this point, like, I'm going to die, but I have a job to do, basically. Yeah. And, you know, he's kind of sick of everybody telling him, you should do this. This is, I can advise you, blah, blah, because they just look at him like a sheep herder. Even Moraine, to a certain extent, is just like, you should do this. You should do this. And he's like, you know what? I spent the last year without you and not eating and being fucking insane. And I'm still here. I'm fucking still standing, still strong.
Yeah.
You know, and so he's like, you know, I'm not completely incapable. And he's starting to respect Moraine less and less as Moraine does not recognize this about him. And it's something that's kind of nuanced. And I didn't get it until I read the book 3 or 4 times. Even Egwene gets kind of mad at him. She's like, why are you treating Moraine like this? He's like, she needs to understand that I've grown and I'm not fucking, you know, little Rand from the village anymore. I have, you know, and like Egwene does too. Egwene gets like, why is she treating me like this? Like, because she's still looking at you like you're a little village girl, even though you don't act like it.
And if he is to do what she has
wants him to
do, he can't be her puppet. And I think she knows that too. She gets frustrated sometimes because she thinks she's got a little bit better plan, but she also knows that, like, if I...
Right, it's kind of like your parents. Like, I know better. Why don't you go to this college? And you're like, I'm going to Chico State. I want to get Eiffel Towered, and I want to fuck a party.
Hey, yeah, it's like, it's cold outside. You should take a jacket. No. Okay.
Maybe I'm going to wear shorts and long socks. How about that? How about that?
Go be cold. See if I care.
God, I was a fucking terrible kid. I was like, can you just dress warmer? I'm just like, it's California. It's going to be 70 later. It's fine. It's got to be cold for a couple hours.
Yeah. And the school keeps its heater at 85. So I'm good.
Right. I'm sweating. speaking of weather, what's the temperature where you're at?
50, probably.
Like, what was your high today?
56.
Fuck. It gets 28 degrees outside right now.
Woo! Yeah, it's 48 right now. Yeah, we topped out at 56.
I keep talking to people about this, my first winter in Spokane, and they're like, whoa, good luck. I'm like, bro, I spent the last 20 years living in fucking mud and gray. Give me that snow. You know how bright snow is?
Oh,
beautiful. Love it. They're like, you won't. I go, live in Seattle 23 fucking years. You'll love it.
Yeah.
It's like 3 months, dude. The rest is like sunshine here. It's amazing.
Yeah. East Washington is, it's desert with snow.
Exactly. Like I said, Rand's just kind of sick of everybody kind of telling him he knows better, and you know, he has a plan, even though if he's kind of like, you know, he's flying by his ass. But I can't even read my fucking handwriting, bro. Also a couple just interesting notes. Matt acquires his horse at some point in this book. I'm not sure exactly when. I think it's when he got to the stone, because you know, you have certain bloodlines of horses, like Morgan horses are really good, stuff like that. Tyran horses are some of the best in the world, apparently, and it is known. Okay. So Rand and Matt both pick up Tyran horses. And Matt's horse Pips is with him all the way to the end of the fucking books.
Ooh, okay.
Which is a lot to say.
I don't remember any of this. Egwene, questions Rand whether the Aiel should have been allowed to take treasures from the stone, comma, the fifth.
So the Aiel have a tradition, and it's called the fifth. Any place that they conquer, whether it's a hold, a city, it's a fucking farm, doesn't matter. They take a fifth of what is there, whether it's food, treasure, money, water. They take a fifth. That's the price you have to pay for being conquered. That's like your tax, and they take it and they go. Could be goats, dude. They'll take a fifth of your goats. Doesn't fucking matter. Yeah. But when they're at the stone, you know, you got to think you're like it's also a palace. So there's tons of Thor. Get out of here. What are you doing? All right, here. Oh, come on. I love it, but you can't come in. They take a fifth. Wolf Brothers. Wolf Brothers on deck. So they take a fifth of the treasure, tapestries, you know, silver goblets, fucking whatever they feel like they like they're entitled to, as long as it's no more than the fifth of. And I, first of all, I don't know who the accountant is that decides that they get exactly a fifth. So, but Rand's response,
if you have four goats, it's going to get messy.
I'm taking a goat and a half, motherfucker. One of your goats is dead. I'm taking one alive. Or you might just get the dead one. So I might take two. Fuck off.
Do the math, fucker.
Yeah, I'll do two and a half.
I'll take a third of one. Yeah.
What's the Bible story? Split that baby.
Oh, you have five goats? Yeah, I'm not taking one goat. I'm taking all five of their heads. That's a fifth of your goats.
You can have four fifths of the meat. Okay? Deal with it. Oh, you like goat milk and cheese? Fuck you. but Rand's main response was like, hey, I told him they could. And he's like, if the Tyrans were to conquer someone else, they'll take everything.
Yeah.
And they'll leave you penniless on the street. He goes, so no, yeah, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. And I need to keep them.
But it's funny, Matt, Perrin, and Rand all get their horses that stay with them for the rest of the show, for the most part. Perrin has a horse named Stepper. Matt has a horse named Pit. Rand has a horse named Jaiden. I don't know how to pronounce that one. But he gets another horse later called Tie-Dye Shar after he gets like some shit happened to him. I don't know where Jaiden ends up, but it's somewhere where I think like Rand starts going back and forth between Camelin and Carheen. I think he's got one horse in each spot.
And he named his horse after Farstrider.
That was the one thing I was concentrating on other stuff. It was like a character out of the book, I believe.
Meet Farstrider. Farstrider is one of the people that Matt brings back to battle, right? What are they called again?
Heroes of the Horn. But yes and no, and I don't want to spoil it. So
okay.
It's, you know, okay. Yes. Think what happened to Uno. Yeah?
Oh.
In the show. Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Dead. I'm back. What's up? So let's see. What do we else go on? The fifth I actually had was my next note was about the fifth. And then Rand starts kind of talking about how he's going to go to Redan and he's got to get there fast and he's got to stay ahead of his enemies. And, he starts talking about using a portal stone again. I don't know if you remember the portal stone when they first meet Selene, they go to that weird realm with the frog, kind of three-eyed frog, giant things. Rand's like, Rand doesn't know how to travel yet.
Was that time travel?
And he's not really trying to.
Was that the time travel thing? Was that another portal stone, or was that a different thing that happened?
Sort of a time travel thing, because they definitely. Well, if you do it wrong, you can like basically. It's not necessarily a time travel thing, but the act of channeling and getting to the world or plane of existence, whatever you would like to call it, can. Like almost accelerate your clock, you can find you're behind now too. When Rand used the portal stone, I think in the Great Hunt with Hurin and Loial and Selene, aka Lanfear, they actually got ahead of Pod and Fane and the Trollocs who had stolen the horn. And that was the thing that Hurin's like, so I'm smelling where they're going to be and going to do violence because we're ahead of them.
But that was stone where that
sort of time travel-y?
Yeah, I know I wasn't quite right,
but yes, that was because of the portal stone.
Okay.
Yes. And one of the things about the portal stone, they've got like a bunch of symbols on them, and Rand kind of asks like, you know, don't fuck with me, Ruark. And Ruark's like, yeah, I've seen that one on the portal stone outside of Ryudan. And he's like, okay, so he starts channeling into it.
So when everyone's like questioning Rand, they're like, "These, we don't even know if these actually exist, and if they do exist, I'm not going to trust you to fucking drive it. Like, this is all crazy."
Exactly, and he's kind of like, he's kind of like, "Fuck your feelings," to Moraine. He goes, "I don't really trust you that much. I have a plan." You know, like any teenager who's flexing his wings and trying to outgrow his parents, you know,
or 9-year-old,
yeah, or whatever, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Or your grandmother, because Moraine's like 90. You know, while often that can be true, maybe they know best, or maybe they have experience that would be useful in a situation. Maybe they're looking at it the wrong way, or for whatever reason you disagree, right? Yeah. Maybe they're right, but you know, Rand can't see it, and Moraine really can't understand what Rand's trying to do at all. But
Rand cannot afford to travel in real time. That's one thing he knows.
Right. Well, he doesn't know how to travel yet.
Well, not that kind of travel. I mean, actually walk.
Oh, you mean like he can't? Yeah, he can't take months to get there, right?
Can't walk. He's like, yeah. It'll be over.
Well, he's like, I can, but basically I'm a sitting duck as I'm crossing the waste. There's no place to hide. There's no, if someone wants to attack me with an army or come at me with the power, he's like, I'm not strong enough to just openly fight someone who is that much, you know, more experienced than me. And I don't have that big of an army yet. And, you know, we wouldn't have any place to defend ourselves or set up shop. We're just going to be a big wagon train of supplies that is easily attacked, right?
And they're not going to take a fifth.
Yeah. Also, one of the things I think Moraine has kind of forgotten, because she's so familiar with Rand, is that he's a fucking Ta'veren and he's a dragon reborn. Sometimes shit just works out how it's supposed to for him, even though he's, you know.
Well, she does, though, by the end of this chapter, she believes in Ta'verenness, like when they're basically guessing which way to go.
Because Matt flips the coin. He's like, "Hey, Rand, I'm a little lucky.
And
I should flip a coin, bro."
And Egwene is like, "Boys are stupid." And Moraine's like,
"Quiet now, child. The adults are speaking." Yeah. "Hey, something's happening. Everybody, shut the fuck up. Something's happening."
Let it happen. The only thing that's happening right now is your mouth is running.
And Rand, Matt, and Perrin, one of the recurring themes, and it's like, it's definitely kind of a man thing, but, you know, it's something that, like, I think you probably are definitely, you've always been a, like, I'll do it my fucking self kind of thing. But in a parental and a partner sense, I think that you can really relate with Rand, Matt, and Perrin in the sense that are like, can I just do this? Can I just do it myself, please? And it's not necessarily, while it is ultimately a control thing, it's a more of like, I just want to like make sure that no one gets hurt. I just want to make sure, like, if someone gets hurt, it's me, it's fine. It's all good.
Yeah.
But I don't want my loved ones to get hurt. I don't want my people to feel this pain. I don't want them to have to go through these things. I will gladly shoulder all of this pain and this burden for the people I love.
Like, so, I tell Cormac, if I break it, I'll get over it. If you break it, I will unfairly blame you for breaking it. I'm not saying that's cool. I'm not saying that's fair. I'm just saying, when you break your own shit, it happens. When your friend breaks your shit, they're assholes.
Mm-hmm. I know, I've broken a lot of people's stuff.
And you're an asshole.
Once I became an adult and had a job, I was never an asshole. I just bought him a new one that was better.
Yeah.
my friend David that is passed, I broke, oh man, I can't even count how many of that dude's bongs, and they were expensive. You know how I break glass. You know.
Hey,
pretty
Dez,
good these days, though.
You think you should be doing that? Yeah.
Irregardless. Okay.
The reason I reference that, people, is because Jason bought a used DVD from Blockbuster, and so I was peeling the Blockbuster sticker off of it, not realizing that that was a security device that destroyed the DVD when you removed it. And so while I was doing it, he said, "Hey, Dez, should you be doing that?" I said, "Yeah." And then the next day I went out and bought him a new DVD, like an adult.
See, you're good like that. That's just being a good friend. That's what I do. You know, that is what it is, man.
You break your mind.
I think that was where the irregardless came out. Fine. Irregardless. Either I'm going to peel this thing off and it's going to work, or I'll go buy you a fucking brand new one. How about them fucking apples, Jason? Ever talk to that asshole?
No, not that I'm against it. I just, if I was in Sacramento.
No, same. Did I tell you?
A Harley, because he's at a Harley Davidson, right?
I don't know if he is anymore. I think I told you this, but me and Lisa got married. So this is, you know, 18 years ago almost.
Yeah.
we got married, we go on our honeymoon. When we fly back into the country, we fly into Sacramento so we can go see my family. They can meet her, have a little reception, whatever. I'm kind of showing Lisa around. We go to the mall, whatever. I'm like, hey, you know, my old brain works.
I don't think I've heard this.
No.
I don't think.
No way.
Let me
preface this, like, by the last month we lived together, I kind of kicked the shit out of this guy.
You just punched him once really hard.
No, I lit him up pretty good. I punched him 4 or 5 times. But it was after he tried to choke me, tried to slap me, and was threatening to, like, I don't know. It was just like, he was like, oh, go tell your parents you're drunk and you fucking did cocaine while you skateboarded. It was like, fucking so what, dude? But then he tried to put his hands on me, and then that's where it got real. And I had to take him to the hospital. Anyways, that being said, you know, I understand why his reaction was this.
Yeah.
I should be laughing. I feel like a terrible person. That being said, motherfucker had it coming for like 10 years. Anyways, I was like, hey, I think my friend works here. Like, why don't we just stop by? I'd love to introduce you to him. At least say hi. We'll see if you, you know. And I walked in and you know, obviously he was in the back. I think he's like a mechanic, you know. He comes out and just like, I could not have been like more nonplussed, like, why the fuck are you here, dude?
You said that to him or he said that to you?
That's what he didn't say that. It was just the look on his face. He's like, hey,
yeah,
what's up, man? I'm like, dude, what's up, bro? How are you doing? He's like, yeah, I have a kid. I was married, or I had a girl. We're not together. Nice to meet your wife. And it was just kind of like,
I got
anything
work.
Else? Anything else, dude? I'm working. My wife's like, wow, he really didn't see, happy to see you. And I was like, did you see the scar on his nose? She's like, yeah. I was like, I gave it to him. She's like, ooh, off to hear that story. I was like, well, hop in the car.
So I have heard that story. I just did not realize that was right after your wedding, like just coming through with your new
wedding. Yeah. And I mean, it had been, you know, a few years since he had moved back, you know.
Totally.
And it's, you know, whatever. It is what it is.
Hey, everyone out there, you ever meet someone who talks like they've never been punched in the face before? He don't talk like that anymore.
I bet he doesn't, dude. He has a lifelong reminder every single day. It was still pretty bad, like 7 or 8 years later. It was like from here, like the tip of his nose. He had like a butt nose now.
Wow. Fucking, what's that actor's name? I can't think of him right now.
The dude that was on Walking Dead.
No, the dude that
Abraham.
Was in Zoolander. The guy in Zoolander.
Owen Wilson.
He's got that Owen Wilson.
You know what's funny? Him and Luke Wilson both got fucked up noses, but in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so weird. But it was that dude, 100%. That is a dude who's never fucking had to face a consequence for his mouth. And boy, did he ever.
Now he
has. I remember Johnny left. He's like, I'm not going to be a part of this.
And I yelled at Tony to stay in the other room.
Then you proceeded to come out and yell at Jason too. You've had, like, I don't remember what you said. You're like, you've had this fucking coming or some shit, dude.
Yeah.
I was like, you should have shut your mouth when he told you or some shit. I can't remember what it was, but it was like, Des, no. Let's clean up the blood and take him to the emergency room.
It was one of those nights where we all should have just gone to bed an hour earlier. And
like last Tuesday.
Didn't. We were probably at the Happy Palace that night.
We were. Tony and I had went to the Mariners game that day together with my parents. Tony wasn't even 21. We drank beers all day. Then we went to the Happy Palace and we're getting fucking faded after that with my parents. Then they left and then we went home and then that's when all that shit went down. So.
It all happened.
He was mostly just butthurt because Linnea dumped his ass. Anyways, back to the story. So two things I want to get to the end, though. Have you heard the story of me getting cuffed outside of Top Foods by my house in Shoreline? And I watched Blink twice, so we need to talk about that at the end.
No.
No, you don't want to talk about it. So...
outside of four blade.
That's fun. So let's see. I kind of lost my spot in my notes. Let me find it. Saving people he loves. Blah, 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 blah. He talks about, and he goes back to talking about going to Ryudan and wanting to use the portal stones. Like you were saying, he starts kind of like basically dropping knowledge bombs on Moraine. He's like, well, you know, there's, I can't remember what he said. There's this many like in the Tyr countryside, and there's really no mistaking what they are. If you see a part of them, you know, there's either a part of that pillar or at least the important part of that stone kind of hanging out. But what he doesn't really say is that he needs to see enough of the stone to really be able to find the right symbol to channel into it to get them where they're going. But what Rand has found out is that it seems like in the Age of Legends, that this was kind of they don't really extrapolate and they really don't go into it, but I would like to know. It seems like this was kind of a common way to travel. Like maybe they'd have an Aes Sedai stationed at the portal stone and people were like, hey, I want to go here. And they could just boom and boom. But I don't know if that was the case either, because they talk about how even then not a ton was known about them. So,
if it was the same stone, it always took you to the same place, right? So once you figured one out, you just
knew. I don't know. There was usually symbols. There's all these symbols on it that are, some of the symbols are for places and some of them are for, you know, for lack of a better term, for like Marvel is like timelines or, you know, planes of existence. That's why some of them where there are really no people, because that's where the Dark One won. So there's just Trollocs and evil creatures everywhere. So the pockets of humans are very small.
Do any of them take you to the world of dreams? Like, is it that crazy?
Okay. That's a really good question and way to pick up on that. They do talk about that, what those worlds, what they think those worlds are reflections of the world of dreams and other realities that like could have happened in the pattern, and they're showing you them in the world of dreams. So it's very similar. It's very similar, actually.
I'm paying attention.
And it definitely is like, you know, if they were, you know, they're not, you know, they're third cousins.
Yeah.
I thought you were making this noise. I'm like, when I said third cousin, I'm like, whoa, dude, gross.
Whoa,
brother. Let's see. So again, you're seeing Rand's, you know, you're seeing that he's not just a farm boy, right? Whether it's because he's been educating himself or some of the things that come into play a little later is that he starts to hear Luce Theron in his head. And then he starts trying to figure it out. And whether it's like something that is like, I don't know if you've ever, forget what the term is. It's like when an animal, like a predator, has it in their DNA. That's like its DNA map. It's like it's mapped into their DNA, right? Does that make? I'm not explaining it well, obviously, but you know what I'm saying, right? Yeah. So think of it like that. But Rand's DNA map is he's the fucking dragon every time. And so if he can figure out how to kind of like tap into that, the knowledge that he has is ancient, for lack of a better term. You know, he has 3,000 years worth of memories and he can do stuff with the power people have never even heard of or dreamed of or stuff like that. And he knows names and places that he should not know for who he is. They're not in a book. There's no place where he can read about it. There ain't no internet for him to research it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's sort of like, what even is that? And he's like, oh, well, it's this. And then he'll be like, I think I read it. I don't know. And it'll be like, Matt does that too, though. Matt will say something about a place and they'll be like, what is that? And he'll be like, I don't know.
It's like Venom.
What do you mean?
Have you seen any of the Venom movies?
Got bit by a snake. She remembers everything. Nothing to be done.
Totally. Go do it. Do it. Kiss her.
Like I said, we got to talk about that a little. Okay. So, like I said, you know, you're seeing Rand, his growth as a character. He is not your farm boy. You're seeing him develop the logic and the political acumen and maneuvering and vision that a king or any kind of major leader or head of state, especially in this world, would have. And he's so very, very young. So people still kind of underestimate him to a certain extent, or, you know, like I said, want to think they can manipulate or bully him. And he's really already past that.
Well, and he's accepted that he's Aiel too, which if he was only Aiel,
yes and no. He thinks he's accepted that he's Aiel. Once he gets to Ryudan, he really understands how Aiel he is. Like right now, he's like, oh, you know, you're the daughter of a maiden. He doesn't really, he knows what it means, or he thinks he knows what it means. But then when he goes to Ryudan, one of the things that he goes through is a Turangriel that's very similar to the Tower Turangriel that the girls go through as they're testing. Except this one, you think of it instead of like a White Tower Fear Factor Terangreal, right? Face your fears. Oh shit, it's gonna get bad. Whatever your fear your mind conjures is what's probably gonna be there. Think of the and I think they're glass columns, they're not arches, but think of it as more of like history documentary about your people. They tell them, you know, they start, you'll like when they first walk through, they go back like a generation or two and you see where your family was then. And then when you go through again, then you see, you know, your family three or four generations back, and then, or, you know, probably more than that, actually probably five generations back, whatever. And then you see him, you know, eventually Rand sees who his family was back to the breaking. And a lot of Aiel cannot handle that because that's where the Jyn Aiel come in, and we'll get to all that shit.
And they talk about it. So I heard some of that. Like I said, when I was driving. I heard some of that, and I was just like, and that's why I was like, well, maybe we should put this into it because
it'll be coming up when they go to Riudan. It explains one of the biggest problems with Rand is that he starts to, you know, only clan chiefs go through these to learn the true history of the Aiel, and they keep it a secret because once the majority of the Aiel people find out, it's a, let's just say it's a fucking problem. And so it's kind of like a, you know, between the wise women and the clan chiefs, it's kind of this closely kept secret of who the Aiel generated from traveling people. And so, you know, once Rand goes through there and it turns out you find out way, way later, and we'll obviously probably revisit this in 15 years. But, when you go through a second time, it starts to go forward and tell you what's coming for your ancestors forward, which is, fucked up. And nobody really know. I think it's, you go through a third time, I think, and that's what happens. I can't remember exactly, but we'll get to it.
Okay. Yeah.
And Rand only goes through once. So he just learns the past. And let's see, you do get a mention of the Jyn Aiel. That's very important. Like I said, traveling people. And then you get the Shido, who are kind of like, man, I wish I had something to compare them to. I really, you know, there's just nothing that I could think of in this world. It's like, if you had, they're Florida. Okay. Everybody's embarrassed of Florida, right? As American, you know, whatever, like, I'm just kidding, Florida. If you listen to Florida, I just mean like, you know, people make fun of certain places. It's sort of like that with the Shido. It's like they're dishonorable. They stretch the rules and the limits of Jito, and you know, it's like they don't have a lot of respect in the other Aiel communities, if that makes sense.
Well, and there are, because I expected the Shido to be one thing, which they kind of are, but I'm looking at it now. Underneath the Shido, there are 83 sets of Shido.
Right.
So, and are they?
Because the Shido are like a hold. Not, I don't think they're a warrior society. So you have all the other warrior societies that can. So like, if you're a Shido, but you're also a maiden, you know you're kind of cool with all the maidens. And if you're a Thunderwalker, then you're kind of cool with all the Thunderwalkers. It's like, I'm not sure how the warrior societies work exactly, but
okay. There's a lot. The Aiel are, for lack of a better word, splintered.
Yeah, they're very oniony. There's a lot of layers to the Aiel, and while they have a very particular set of beliefs, the Shido are kind of the ones who flout it, and it's like,
well, and to kind of use your Florida analogy, like everyone's like, oh, they're just Americans, and we're like, no, I'm Montanan, I'm not American.
Yeah, I'm not American. Exactly. I am from California, then the Pacific Northwest. I'm cool with everybody if I can.
Don't let me in with whatever's going on.
No, exactly. But, you know, you're seeing that Rand's instincts are really good, and he's doing his best to sharpen those instincts and gain knowledge. Sorry, I talk for a living, people. And 8 hours a day, I'm getting a little tongue-tied, a little tired. But, you know, he is constantly trying to, you know, gain knowledge in his world and his mind. Knowledge is very much power. And, you know, there's just not enough known about the things that he's facing, whether it's Forsaken or trying to, you know, fulfill these prophecies and get the world behind him to fight together for the last battle. It's like, you know, he's facing a lot of stuff that really no one has ever dealt with, at least since Arthur Hawkwing's time. And, you know, probably since the breaking or before,
trying,
you know,
so. He's trying to mend the world, and it broke a million years ago. So
yeah. So a lot of scar tissue to like try to take care of. So he's a lot of vitamin E.
He's trying to make the Two Rivers great, Ipple.
I see what you did there. M-T-R-G-A. Mertka. It's close. And then I love, you know, like kind of, that's about all I got. You see kind of at the end, Matt's like, well, I'm pretty lucky. Could just flip a coin, decide which way to go, decide which, you know, because that's a big deal. If, like I said, if Fran picks the wrong symbol, they could lose months or gain months or fucking who knows, turn into, because you know, what if you hit that weird dimension where it's like Salvador Dali dimension, everybody's a melty clock. You're not getting anything done then, bro. You're fucked. Starry Night, my ass. I know that's the wrong artist, but
we're just on a white sheet of paper that no one has drawn on.
Yeah, what you said earlier too. I got to know that she knows Tavir and at work when she sees it, right?
Yeah,
she's like, yeah, it's time for fucking me to just shut up and you know, you're doing great. You're doing great. Like 30 more seconds, we can loop it. You're almost done. another inside one. Sorry, people. I just wanted to make Des laugh. Yeah, she just basically tells Egwene to shut up, and then I got a little clip of Rand. Just,
all right.
So we're at 35 minutes in the Dragon Reborn. Is it out of the stone, I believe?
Yes.
That's right.
Chapter 22.
Oh, shush, Michael Kramer. 35 minutes. And this is just Rand kind of like wrapping up. Come on. This is just Rand wrapping up how, you know, his plans. And also he has he does have an angry old fat man that nobody.
Oh, yes.
Knew about. He found it, and when he was going, so when they all went to the doorway, like kind of in like the basement of the Stone of Tear, that whole room had a bunch of items of the power in it, and Rand was just kind of like, it was something that was just like, oh, what's this? Oh shit, okay, this is I'm keeping this is me, it'll be good, dibs. Right. Because he, you know, he could pick it up and he obviously could recognize what it was immediately. And it's just like a little Buddha with a sword across his lap. You know, it's, I think it's jade. But that, as much power as that gives him, in any kind of, you get a little, I think, in this clip, you get a little kind of like what it kind of feels like to channel, like how amazing. And it, you know, it's, I suppose it's probably a little like
blood sex.
It's amazing and disgusting same time. All right.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's disgusting. I don't even like, that's a terrible joke. I'm an awful person. anyways. So that's what you get. But like, and just so you know, like that Angrio, as much as it increases in power, is like nothing compared to Kalendor. Or, you know, later on he gets this other access key. You remember he comes across that giant statue that's halfway buried, and like even Lanfear is like, we should keep going.
Does he say
because it's
about Kalendor leading him to the little fat man? Did I miss your that?
I think so. Yeah. I think what he was I think what he's saying is that because once he held Kalendor, he kind of knew what it felt like. It's like, you know, I learned how to tie this knot. So now I always know how to tie this knot. He like picked up and was like, oh, I know what a saw Angrio feels like. And he picked up an Angrio. It's like a little less like, oh, this must be an Angrio. And then he kind of tested it out and he's like, oh, yeah, wow, I feel a lot stronger, you know?
Which everyone out there, he needs to channel large enough to take this group with him.
Yeah, and Des, I know I should probably know this. Do you know how many people are in that group? I'd say like probably 200.
I don't know.
Because they don't really give you a number, but like what's your estimation on it? I'd figure between 150, 200 is my guess. But I would have maybe said, it's only like 100.
I would have said 40, honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. I was thinking it was at least 100, but maybe it's only like 40 people. I don't know.
I mean, 100.
He's got to think his party's 10. Almost 10.
Yeah. And the Aiel.
Yeah, you're probably right. It's probably like 50 max.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. Anyways, all right, let's get into this. Like I said, 35 minutes, chapter 22, Out of the Stone. Rand is just kind of finishing up his little speech about Kalendor and what he's going to do. If I can get my phone to open.
Stupid.
There we go.
Stupid phone.
We are going to Roydian.
We're going to Roydian.
Rand bounced the carving on his palm and bent to pat the portal stone. To Roydian. Right now.
Kor
gave him a long, flat look, then straightened, already calling to the other Aiel. Moraine took a step closer up the grassy slope. What is that? She asked curiously. An Angrio, Rand said, turning it in his hand. One that works for men. I found it in the Great Holding when I was hunting that doorway. It was the sword that made me pick it up. And then I knew. If you are wondering how I mean to channel enough of the power to take us all, Aiel, pack mules, and everybody and everything, this is it. Rand, Egwene said anxiously, I am sure you think you are doing what is best, but are you certain? Are you certain that Angriel is strong enough? I can't even be sure it is one. I believe you if you say it is, but Angriel vary, Rand. At least those that women can use do. Some are more potent than others, and size or shape is no guide.
That's cute, Egwene, trying to tell me about channeling.
Of course I'm certain, he lied. There had been no way to test it, not for this purpose. Not without letting half of Tyr know he was up to something, but he thought it would do, just. And as small as it was, no one would know it was gone from the stone unless they decided to inventory the holding. Not likely that. You leave Kalimdor behind and bring this, Moraine murmured. You seem to have considerable knowledge of using portal stones, more than I would have thought. Varen told me a good bit, he said. Varen had. But it had been Lanfear who first explained them to him. He had known her as Selene then, but he did not intend explaining that to Moraine any more than he would tell her of the woman's offer of help. The Aes Sedai had taken the news of Lanfear's appearance too calmly, even for her, and she had that weighing look in her eyes, as if she had him on balance scales in her mind. Take a care, Randolph Thor, she said in that icy, musical voice. Any Tavirin shapes the pattern to one degree or another, but a Tavirin such as you might rip the age lace for all of time. He wished he knew what she was thinking. He wished.
So that's just, you know, little, you can see a little bit of Moraine's vibe while she's definitely reappraising Rand at that point. But also I feel like at this point, she says something, I think in this chapter too, about being worried that he's corrupted by Lanfear. I think this is, she's reappraising him, not in a good way. She's starting to wonder, oh, you know, does someone else have their hooks in him in a way, that, you know, that I should be worried about? It's something that Moraine is, I feel like she's constantly battling herself because she wants to respect Rand. She's so scared because she's, you know, like, so she, besides the fact she dedicated her life to it, she's a person who does the right thing and wants to, you know, hero status. She wants to get Rand ready to save the world. She knows she's not, you know, the one that's going to take on the boss, but she's going to help the dude who's going to take on the boss get ready. Right. So.
She's not the pod mistress.
No, she's not. Please, motherfucker. And I think that's all I got. I mean,
wink out of existence.
Boink. It's sort of traveling.
They gone.
That's all I got, man. Anything you got, like, question wise, and like what you, any kind of like, because I know you got a little bit of a head, anything that kind of pertains to this that you're like, whoa.
No, this was this chat, like I said, we're finally kind of getting into it and I'm able to keep up a little bit. And you know, I asked all my questions I asked during our conversation. So I feel kind of caught up. This has nothing to do with what we talked about, but just going forward, do you think we should just do the next chapter or do we need to do the next two so we can get more? The next chapter is kind of long, but it kind of bleed. The next two chapters, I think, kind of bleed into each other, don't they?
I feel like you're right. Let me. I'm actually off tomorrow because I gotta go to court. So I got the day off. But I'm going to let. Hopefully, I'll have time at some point to listen to it and like take some notes. If I feel like it's going to be too much, we can maybe do like a split. But I feel like you're right, and I feel like we could probably, you know, condense it into one episode. So
we're definitely talking about chapter 23 Beyond the Stone next week, and then we may push into Ryudan. But we'll you know, we're going in order, people, so whatever we do,
yeah,
will be next. And
I feel like we should just do, probably, seeing as how I'm such a fucking windbag, we should do probably 22 and 23 because they are a lot.
Yeah.
But like I said, let me get into it. And like I said, I was texting you while I was taking my notes. I was like, we need to dedicate an hour to this because it's
yeah,
it's a lot.
Yeah,
it's definitely just a lot. So
because I can't remember right now, like this chapter. I'm glad you did this now because we got a lot did happen. Just getting to know people and what's going on in their head. Mostly what makes me want to bunch chapters is depending on how much they complain about the opposite sex. So if they spend half the next chapter complaining about penises and vaginas, then it won't be as big of a chapter as we think it is. But we're moving.
I'd probably skip book 10 completely. sorry. Wait, that's political non-intrigue. My bad. So yeah. All that being said, yeah, there's about a lot. I think I'm pretty excited about the next, like, probably till the end of the year, the next like 4 or 5 that we got are going to get us really, really into the deep meat of what's going on. And it's good stuff. Good stuff. At least I loved it a lot. So
my prediction is this will be in the show, but so truncated it won't resemble. Like, it's just going to be Rand and Moraine, and then they'll run into the Aiel when they get to Ryudan or something like that. Like, I don't think we're going to get a big group together in Tyr and come.
No team up, dude. No, I feel like we can probably, we will do some kind of craziness for them to get to Ryudan, because I know they are going there. I feel like Matt goes with Tom, goes through a doorway in Tenshiko, maybe, if that's in the season at all, which I really hope it is. And if they did that, that'd be okay if they somehow went to the same place through different doorways, as long as they let you know that it's kind of the same place. That'd be fine. But like I said, I feel like I agree with you. It'll be pretty truncated. It'll be kind of a... it'll be him and Moraine and maybe like Matt and Tom and Egwene or something, you know, I don't know. Like, I think it'll be a much smaller party. And they're going to have to figure out a way. He's going to either travel or maybe do a portal stone to the waste like this. And that being said, where they're at in Falm to go to the waste, like Tyr, right? This is Tyr.
Yeah.
Where this is. Then here's the waste over here. All the way over here is Falm. Over there. So it's like all, like, it could be like equivalent of like, all right, we're going to go to Martha's Vineyard. We're in San Diego.
I think I say this every episode, but if we started here, I wouldn't be surprised.
No, I wouldn't be either. And I mean, or, you know, you get a little expo dump because, you know, Randy Jeffcoat likes to do that a lot. Yeah. And leave out all the important shit.
Definitely. Well,
a lot of exhibition, none of it matters.
Right. Yeah. And then they'll just talk about when Vane and Rand are bitching about Perrin, then we'll know what Perrin's up to. And when Matt's talking about getting lucky, then we'll know what Matt's been doing.
Right.
Maybe we will have this little travel pack, and it will be conversation that catches us up with the first 20 chapters.
So, and I'll tell you why I'm thinking this at the end. And like, you know, do I really think that this would happen or expect to happen? Absolutely not. After every wrong prediction I've made, they make a big point of the guy who plays Ingtar just like staring at Rand all like lovingly at the end of last season when the dragon thing goes up. Right? Do you remember that?
I
do. Remember what I'm talking about? No. Maybe not. It's just for a second. Only super fucking nerds like myself even know that I think that dude's name is even named Ingtar, because I don't even know if you get introduced to him. I think at one point Perrin maybe like makes a joke with him, or Uno makes fun of him, something. But it's like very quick. He just stares up at him all lovingly. He's someone in this book that becomes the prophet. He traveled with Rand and all the Shinarians and Uno in the end of book 3 when they're trying to catch up to Rand. And part of his maniacal devotion, I don't know, whatever, worshiping of Rand, it has to do with like, why did the Lord Dragon leave us? And then he's part of the crew trying to kind of catch up to him. And then a little ways after, you know, Moraine sends them on their own errand, and just her land Perrin and like Egwene go after him. And, you know, he becomes such a large part of the story and really detracts from Rand because he's a scumbag. But the fact that they made a point, you know, maybe it's just fan service, like, oh, here's the dude who becomes the prophet in season 8 or whatever, you know, and he has a small part to play. I'm wondering if they sort of like try to make Rand take off from everybody, how everybody's kind of in Falm, you know, everybody kind of met up in Falm, you know, Perrin's there, Matt's, I think, there, Egwene's there, you know, Elaine's there, Nynaeve's there, everybody's there, right? That's kind of how we are at the end of Dragon Reborn, and everybody's kind of hiding out in the mountains. Maybe we get something like that they've left Falm, or they're outside of Falm hiding out, or they're traveling to Camelin to go talk to Elaine's mom and they're hiding out or something. And then Rand freaks out and takes off. Maybe he takes off to go to the waste. I don't think we're going to get Tyr. Maybe he, you know, it's like, I'm thinking something like that, maybe tied in, trying to like really, I mean, you're really smashing together stuff at that point.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with it because it would have some semblance of the story I know. So, you know, I know we're going to get Elida in this season. I'm hoping that we get the deposition of Suan in the tower, because I think that's how Rand left the tower with Lanfear and Suan got kind of like fucked up by Lanfear or whatever. Like, I think that she never recovers from that. I think that there is a faction in the tower that's either already on their way, already there, already planning to move against her, whether they're Black Aja or people that think she's fucked up to support the dragon or whatever, or think she just thinks she's doing a bad job, whatever. I think that's coming real quick in this season. It was season three. Jesus Christ. I don't know. Yeah. I think it's going to come pretty fast. I think it's going to be to the forefront pretty quickly. I think the first time you see any major Aes Sedai, it's going to be in the tower, and it's going to be something to do with her getting removed from her station, yeah, is what I think, or killed or something, you know. And I'm not sure exactly how they're going to go with it, but I really think that we'll get that pretty early. That being said, yeah, I think this season should be a roller coaster and really fast moving. If they want to do it right, they're going to have to move fast. And I don't expect them to do it right, but, you know, let's hope they fucking get a C+. Give me 5 out of 8 good ones.
Hit the high watermarks. Do it.
Rafe, if you were just like a number 6 hitter, give me like 275, maybe like 15 homers, 70 RBIs, maybe steal a couple bases, man.
Lots
you
of singles.
You gotta be the cleanup hitter, my guy.
Lots of singles. Yeah.
There's always good for utility men who hit doubles.
You know what they call someone who fails 3 out of 4 times? A professional baseball
player. An all-star.
No, that's 2 out of 3.
No, if you fucking win half the time, you are Ted Williams.
That's what I'm saying. If you fail 75% of the time, you're still in the show.
I should have stayed playing baseball. I usually hit like 750 every year.
Oh.
Because I fucking hated striking out. So I'd just be like, 2 strikes, oh, single to left, beep, slap it. All right.
I know. It's,
I'll fucking bunt so I get on base, bro. I don't care.
My son is such a like home run or nothing. And I'm just like, I played baseball for 7 years, never took one over the fence. But
I didn't take anything over the fence till I quit playing seriously.
Oh, really?
Because I always hit for situations. I was that dude who hit lots of doubles. I got home runs, but it was when I was like before we had fences.
Yeah.
I never hit for power because I was kind of skinny and I would take one power swing and usually I'd fucking gap or a double or a triple and that'd be it.
Like, oh, the shortstop's going to slide to the left? Well, you're fucked.
Yeah, that's a fucking dribbler through the hole, my man. Let's go. When I started hitting left-handed, when I finally stopped playing seriously, that's when I started hitting for power. I hit jacks all the time.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, all right. Anything else, Dez? Oh, we got some story time.
I'm good. Tell
real quick. Stories. It'll be short. It'll be pretty short story time. And it was, so first of all, I watched Blink twice.
Oh,
I see what I see why there's a trigger warning. For sure. And it's one of those things I kind of, I don't want to say I figured it out, but I kind of was like, okay, I kind of see, I think I see what's going on here. But that movie is fucked up.
Yeah.
I think one of the most fucked up things about it, other than the obvious stuff, is towards the end when he's like, kill you. You're like my best friend. And I'm like, that's fucking horrifying.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely horrifying. But the way she kind of flips it on its head, I'm like, ask him what happened to his pinky. Ask him.
That is the twist I did not see coming. Like,
which part though? Like, the fact that they were just doing it every night and.
No, the fact that she'd been there before.
Oh, yeah. I didn't really. You know, I thought something maybe like for whatever reason the Red Rabbit, I was like, she knows her, but like how?
Oh,
right?
Like, yeah.
So I never put it together that when I finally I'm like, oh, Red Rabbit, I fucking get it, dude. I thought she thinks she's like getting drunk on the snake venom. She's like, shh.
I thought it was part of the game. I thought Red Rabbit was gonna be, I thought the twist was gonna be some game they play at night where they chase the Red Rabbit or something.
Yeah, because everything's red there.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, they put like a fucking red like bunny suit on him or some shit. I don't fucking know. Donnie Darko, I don't fucking know. Yeah. But that being said, that movie is scarily nuanced with the plight that women go through and you know, how, you know, people want to talk about men being competitive, like women competitive, and that's the only way you survive or get the man you want or the job you want or, you know, and it's very telling and it's fucking right on. It's one of those movies I worry is a little so shocking that the message will get lost because of some people. Like, they will just be like, oh, that's horrifying, and they will miss the message. That's like a horror movie that's commenting on, you know, that's a social commentary as well.
And well, and like, it's interesting how much we have to level up for movies, because it's basically a comment on Epstein Island. But if these women...
It's that and so many other things. Just women. Like, the what women have to go through in general on a fucking daily basis with men in power.
But, like, to tell the story honestly, the audience would hate it because they would just be like, just call the fucking cop. Just tell somebody. And it's like, it's not that fucking easy. And then so this
movie, they take your phones. You're stuck there for weeks. They're giving you fucking drugs. And it's like,
yeah,
starts off as fun and then ends up a fucking nightmare. No, just all of that, you know, like it has little lines drawn to so many things about, you know, just the difference in power between the genders. And like I said, you really see, like, I feel like as a woman, it would be really hard to watch that movie and not feel really, really angry. I was angry watching it. At the same time, it's a really good movie, but, you know, it's very much more than a movie, in my opinion. I was like, it is, I hope people give it credit for being more than a movie, because it very much is.
Brian, been on a weird gaslighting movie bender.
Don't get me started on gaslighting, bro.
I don't know why. What's it called?
Hollywood was the worst at it.
Oh, damn it. Why can't I remember the name of that movie? There's this new movie out. I can't remember the name of it. It's not necessarily gaslighting, but it is a little bit. But it's interesting. I watched that one, which is typical American, you know, the people who are being held captive fight back and win.
They get some guns and shoot everybody.
I watched the fucking European version where the good guys don't win. And it's just like,
oh, wow.
Holy sh! I can't believe I'm going to have to go silent here for a minute, because I feel like I'm doing everyone a disservice by not saying the name of this movie.
That's cool. That's one of the reasons why, you know, I think some people kind of like, oh, you know, The Boys, and it's very, very violent. It's very graphically, it's pretty sexual in some ridiculous ways and stuff. But I feel, unlike, I've read some of the comics too, and they're even a little bit more hardcore in some ways. I feel like if you had a world where superheroes existed, this shit, The Boys, is so right on in the most terrifying way that it could be. You know, it's like everybody knows Superman's story. Like, there's very few people on this planet that do not know Superman's story. And one of the first times I saw it kind of imagined a different way was a movie called Brightburn. And it's where it's like basically the Superman story, kid crashes in the fucking country. He's raised by these people and he's a fucking little omen demon kid. And so that was, and like that doesn't get too far into it. It kind of ends when he starts getting really kind of fucked up. But that kid grew up to be fucking Homelander, dude. You know, if you had the Superman that was not trying to save everybody and was not in love with humans as a species or whatever. And I can't even name the dude who plays Homelander. That dude is one of the greatest action actors. And he emotes so well without saying a fucking word. Like the teeth. And like, it's like his little eye twitches when he's like feeling anxious and stuff. That dude is so good, man. And how terrifying would that be?
Yeah. Anthony Starr is his name. Yeah, he's fucking...
That's Homelander?
Yeah.
What's the movie you're talking about, though?
So the movie I'm talking about is Speak No Evil.
It
just came out recently.
Somebody just told me about that. And they were saying that they didn't want to watch it because... I heard a spoiler about it, and they're just like, nope. And I think that was the American version, so I don't know.
Yeah, the fucking European version is like, holy shit, it fucked me up.
Why are Europeans so dark? Last couple minutes. So, yeah, you really haven't heard this story?
I don't think so.
I guess you guys, I think, were probably down at Shock T at this point, I think. It was right, so it was probably 2011 or 12, I had gotten the stupid weed DUI where, like, I was literally just going home from work and there was a high speed chase. And the guy's car literally died in the intersection at 175th and Shoreline, where you get off the freeway to go to my old house. And so I'm sitting there for like 10 minutes. They're like yanking this guy out of the car. He tried to run, they tackled him, whatever. I'm just sitting there watching all this shit go down. I'm like, fuck it, man. I just got off work. I was working at Blue. It was like almost midnight. I'm like fucking exhausted. I just want to go home. It was my Friday. I had some Vietnamese food. You know, Lisa's in bed. We're about to watch movies. I'm like, I just want to go home. So I go like, I'm going to hop on 145th and go, you know, like go get on the freeway from 175th, go up to 145th and then come back up, you know, whatever, Meridian or whatever. One of the cops who's kind of on the side, obviously like the rookie, sees me kind of like slowly pulling forward and literally runs and throws himself on the hood of my old Hyundai. And this was in medical days. I had medical paperwork and I was carrying all the time. You know, I had my pistol. I worked downtown. I carried.
Oh, this was not 2011. Maybe
2010.
I don't know.
I went to jail in 2012 for that one. Let's just say that. Okay. So anyways, you know, I've told that story. Like I had to, you know, I did my community service. My homeboy that worked at the nonprofit kind of helped me out with that. I did my work release for all that, whatever, you know, that anyway, I got pulled over, you know, he was like, roll down your window. I'm like, no. So I had just gotten like a pound of weed, like right after work. And I was still, you know, I was black market selling at that point because it was still legal, but it was medical. So it was kind of covered rare. Anyways, I got in trouble for that, whatever. It was after I had dealt with like the DUI part of it. I pled guilty to DUI. They did not find the pound of weed. That's a story for another day. And so I was dealing with that and I didn't have my license back yet. Right. So Lisa would have to come and pick me up from work. She comes and picks me up from work and we go to Top Foods, which it's where the Trader Joe's is now. You know, it's right down the street from my house. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm like, hey, let's go there. We gotta get a soda, maybe get some food, whatever. And of course I just got off work. She's driving. I might've smoked a joint out. I was probably hitting my pipe, you know, on the way home, but just got off work.
Yeah.
Hop out at Top Foods and we're bullshitting, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And she's not great about driving. She's nervous. You know, she hates it. So she's kind of stressed anyway. And we're walking to Top Foods and these two dudes come up and start talking to me. They're like, bro, where's the fire, bro? Smell the fire, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, I don't know what you're talking about, bro. Just like, leave me alone. And they proceed to badger me from like the outside of the parking lot all the way almost to the door. And I think I had like a nug in my pocket for whatever reason, like in a jar or something. And I was just like, here, dude, go away. Leave me alone, please. Takes it. And I start walking to the store, click, click, grab me, put handcuffs on me. I'm like, what's going on? And he's like, oh, you're trying to distribute weed. I go, no, the fuck I'm not, bro. You've been badgering me. I go, if you were asking me for $5, I'd have given it to you. If you'd asked me for my sweatshirt, I'd have given it to you. I wanted you to go the fuck away from me. I thought you were like a homeless person asking me for money. I was like, you better get these fucking handcuffs off me right now. My wife's like, you better take them off. I was like, we have a good fucking lawyer and he's got a medical card. He's allowed to possess. You were badgering him. This will not hold up in court. And I was like, fuck with me, bro. I was like, I've been going through shit. I have a good lawyer. And he was like, well, bro, what's up? Blah, blah, blah. And I go, don't talk to me. I go, don't fucking talk to me. Take the handcuffs off me. I shop here every day with my kids. Take these fucking handcuffs off. I was like yelling at him. And he was like, bro, I was like, you can't do anything to me. Here's my card. You bothered me. I didn't ask for money. Leave me alone. And I was like, and he like kept on. I'm like, I go, I swear to God, I'm telling you one more time. I go, Lisa, call Phil. And she started dialing my lawyer. And he was like, hey, okay. I was like, I swear to God. I go, what's your name? What's your badge number? I go, I'm not doing this. I am not doing this. God. I go, you came up to me. You're bothering me. She's driving. I got stoned after work. No laws have been broken here. I'm going home and you need to take these fucking cuffs
off. And I didn't sell you shit.
Yeah. And they did. They did.
What? And just imagine if you had asked him for $5, that whole story changes. But the fact that you're like, here's one for free, get the fuck away from me.
What's smart about it is like, there was two tellers that we knew by name and they knew us by name.
Oh my God.
Guess who were both working?
Oh God.
I still remember their names, Caroline and Devin.
Oh man.
Caroline worked at the Central Market where my son goes all the time. He's like, I know your dad. silver bracelets. All right.
Oh, so, my God. Yeah. That is amazing, Justin.
That was a pretty satisfying interaction I had with the cop. I was kind of like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you. I have the power.
And this is really what you're spending your night doing, trying to get a fucking
right.
dime bag out of
it. I'm pretty sure that came out of my mouth, too. I'm like, you don't have fucking some heroin addicts or some rapists to go arrest. I go, get the fuck out of Top Foods' parking lot.
I can.
He's like, well, there's a lot of drug activity going down here. I go, yeah, for meth. Get away from me. I was so mad, dude. Oh, I was so mad. Because I think I like literally had dealt with everything and I was like getting a car and I was going to have to go to like do my work release and everything like the next month. And I was like, oh. I swear to God.
I can see the light at the end of the tunnel and I'm going to burn you to death with it.
What does Liam Neeson say? I have a very particular set of skills. I will kill you. I will find you and I will kill you.
Oh my God. And having a, having a good lawyer, people. It's a good thing. I remember looking at a car dealer at his face and saying, I'll see you. You'll talk to somebody, but it won't be me.
If you've never watched Breaking Bad, aka Better Call Saul, for any of our younger listeners or anybody, period, who gets in trouble with the law, let me tell you this. You don't need a criminal lawyer. You need a criminal, lawyer. My lawyer's entire family lives in Canada.
Oh.
They are all involved in organized crime.
Oh.
He's like, I could go back and forth to Canada and do whatever I want. Do I? I'm a lawyer. No. But I will pick up all of that money you made illegally in cash on my Ducati. I'll see you after court. That being said, put the dagger in the horn box, motherfuckers.
May you always find water and shade and leave your laptop in 15 minutes.
I will, brother. Love you. Peace out. Good episode, fam. See you, buddy. Leave the studio. Yes. I am not average. I am not ordinary. I am a masterpiece. You know I do it for me. I am not perfect. No, that's imaginary.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.